On today's episode of Beat Husband, She Brags About podcast, we've got Kevin Oroz. Kevin is a high-performance coach, workshop and retreat facilitator, and host at the Revolution podcast. He coaches men and women on the core practices and perspectives necessary to create more relational intimacy, sexual desire, and lasting success in love. And so with that intro, Kevin Oroz, it's an honor and a privilege to be jumping in, having a powerful conversation with you again, brother. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Mark. Thank you for inviting me, and it's good to see you again.
Just a little bit of backstory, you know, to the guys listening in. It's sort of like a setting the tone or the context. It's like a continuing and a deepening conversation between Kevin and myself. I two other, if you want to say, manifestations, evolutions of my podcast, my journey before this platform, but I've enjoyed two amazing conversations with Kevin about three and a half, four years ago. And yeah, just excited to reconnect. And within the context, like, Kevin, you know, when we met first, what I was really drawn to you, definitely at the time, like, you were beginning to deepen, I feel like, in your conscious study of tantra, of deep intimacy, you know, the sacred masculine and feminine dynamics, and that work over the years. I'm off social media now, but I have loved seeing the evolution of your work, you know, with the Polarity Dojo, your Facebook group, and your work there. Yeah, that's definitely the reason to invite you in today. You know, the guys listening in, is to get this sort of an on-the-ground practical perspective or paradigm of masculine and feminine dynamics that can help guys show up in marriage, keep intimacy alive, keep connection, communication, just keep it, you know, in what's a very intense arena for every man that has made that sacred commitment. So yeah, just loving to see where your work has taken you, where it has evolved to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm receiving the mission coordinates from, you know, spirit. Like, I did not think I would be going this far into this subject, but it is consistently what people want from me, and they tell me in polls and marketing, and what my life is just, yeah, here you go. And every time I've tried to move away from it, something will happen and be like, all right, back over here. And I'm like, fine, I'm surrendered to it. And it's also a lot of fun.
Yeah. And the one thing that I noted, you know, like, from, if you want to say, public reaction, you know, when I was on Facebook, anytime I dip in and one of your posts would come up, I was always astounded by, like, the simplicity of, you'd put one statement. And to my mind, a nervous system, you know, because I've done quite a number of years, David Aida style, you know, masculine, feminine, a lot of the stuff that I would read, I was like, yeah, that just sounds grounded and sensible. You know, it works out for me, you know, what you were stating. It works out for me in my relationship with my queen. And yet, you know, I just go down the comments. It's like, okay, right, it's another Kevin Oroz post. And there's like, the comments have exploded. And boy, fucking boy, like, you know, it's a topic is polarity, but fuck me, it's like, it's so polarizing. These simple statements, these simple teachings, or seemingly simple, the explosive nature of what every single post would tend to provoke in men and in women, and these, you know, back and forth sort of arguments about these perspectives. I mean, what a hot topic. I'm curious, what observations have you made, Kevin? Like, what are the most polarizing ideas that you put forward, you know, from a sacred masculine and feminine conscious relationship polarity? What are the most polarizing ideas that gets the most kickback? Are there any patterns you've noticed?
100%. I mean, it is from a sociological and like observing humanity perspective, it's blowing my mind. Like, really the last 6 months is where I've turned up the heat and just consistently been creating content just on relationship dynamics. And holy shit, I've never had to block so many people. I've never had so much like hate mail or hate DMs, and just people are grabbing the pitchforks and torches. And it's like, whoa. And it's funny because I have a quote that's been sitting on my bio on Facebook before I even started coaching or being an entrepreneur years ago, maybe 9 years ago. And it's Orwell. And it's like, in an era of lies, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Simple truth, just like the sun is shining, the sky is blue. Because what I see, Mark, and it really breaks my heart because I know some of these people, you know, my family and friends back in Texas. I know these people. It's not like they're just out there, other. I've witnessed them and experienced them. People are so conditioned at this point. They're so blue-pilled. They're so mind-fucked by the assault of news media and the insidious ideas about moral relativism, the fluidity of belief in anything beyond scientific materialism, which is this reductionist worldview that has been shoved down our throats harder than ever since coronavirus. Let's just be, call a spade.
Yep.
And now it's entered the domain of gender. It's in the domain of sexuality, which is always, it's been there. But at this point, the most crazy polarizing truth you can say is that men are men and women are women. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a non-binary space. There is. It's not as common as the media would have you believe, though. If you, and you can go back to indigenous tribes, you can go back to ancient folks all around the world. We're talking China, Aztec, Mayan, Inuit, Eskimo. Take your pick of the tribe. They all had what they called, you know, they have different terms, but twin-spirited beings. So even they recognized non-binary humans back then. Now, these humans were usually shamanic practitioners. They were doulas. They were guardians of the threshold because they could play in both worlds. And if their sexuality was fluid, they also, it came with a lot of other abilities like healing and scrying and seeing, which I thought was interesting. Now, what we have is an environment where if you just speak to heteronormative men or heteronormative women who want to have better sex, more intimacy, stronger relationships, you have this scapegoating mob. And they'd never say this to my face. And I've met people that have been my trolls in person and they apologize to me and they come up and thank me. You never hear this in person. People will never say this to your face. But online, there's this interesting network effect where it's like kind of the town square, you know, where people are throwing tomatoes and just shouting at each other. This happens. And it happens around sexuality because everyone has wounding around the masculine and feminine. It's just a fact.
Yeah. And like the polarizing nature of it, I don't know, as you were speaking there, I just like the townsfolk idea. I don't know if you've seen the, what's the, on Netflix, the documentary series on Osho. And like part of Osho, the beauty was
Wild Country.
Wild Country. Yeah. And it's like just the shock nature, you know, where this video came out, where, you know, part of the practices, I don't know what it was called, but it was like sort of everybody in the room was nude. It was a sexually liberated sort of a dance, cathartic release. And then it went to the townsfolk, you know, the commentaries, the shocking, oh my God, what they're doing, you know, beyond the hill. And it just, it, the topic just has this potent level to rock society to its core.
Yeah. It's because it's challenging taboos and beliefs that have been held for thousands of years. I mean, again, let's speak frankly about the influence of organized religion. Now, obviously, I'm of European descent. You are too. Christianity has been running the show for a while. Mm-hmm. And what have they done? They've demonized sexuality. They've shamed the human body. They've suppressed the feminine, not just in women, in men too. So we all have both poles. It's one of the core ideas, yin and yang. And, you know, it's not just the church. The state has done plenty on its own. But we shouldn't be surprised that when we start talking about love, sex, dating, marriage, infidelity, polarity, masculine protection and providence, feminine surrender and submission, these are charged topics that are carrying millennia of unfelt feeling. Which is why a normal, sensible person that you're like, oh, Frank's he's a cool guy. He gets it. You say something like, oh, well, most women in polls won't have a second date with a man who splits the bill. Suddenly Frank, because of conditioning or whatever, turns into a psychopath in the Facebook comments and starts doing character assaults and talking mad shit because it's touching something in him. That doesn't mean that what the reality of that in his dating life is true. Maybe it's not true. Maybe he has an alternative lifestyle of relating, which is awesome. But the fact that you can't just hear someone make a statement, that the silent majority, by the way, is loving. The minority, the woke mafia or woke mob, which I'm using blanket statements here, but it's just a fact. You can go through these threads and identify these people. You click on their profile and all they do is troll. Mm. These people aren't creative. You know, some of them might be, but I rarely see ones. Their entire feed and existence on social is critique, commentary, disdain, and shit talking.
Yeah.
Which, hey, I believe in free speech. So if that's what you want to use social tools for, awesome. That's cool. But just don't do it in my on my lawn. I'm gonna block your ass.
Yeah. And on a level, like, and it is really important to give that sociological, you know, the conditioning effect over millennia. It's like absolutely live. It's the elephant in the room. And if it's not spoken to, I suppose it detracts from the level of intensity that that a man can feel. Getting to, if you want to say, a practical level. So we nod and we bow to this intergenerational, you know, the effects of millennia on our belief systems. But on a very practical level, Kevin, and with the audience being guys listening in, husbands, how does that conditioning show up on a practical level? You know, if you talk about Frank, you know, like your standard guy, he's married, he's a good guy, he's showing up with the best intentionality, you know, he wants to have a good marriage. But what are the type of scenarios that you would see most that this conditioning comes out in the, you know, in the practical everyday of marriage, of deep long-term committed relationships? What are the most triggering moments when guys just lash out and they drop into heart disconnection, the disconnect from the woman? They might even like go, no, fuck you, I'm going to leave the relationship, because why? They're triggered that much. What are the patterns that show up most commonly where this level of belief and disconnection shows up its ugly head?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not married personally. I should state for the record, I'm in a beautiful relationship of almost 2 years. I've been in collectively like 10 or 12 years of long-term relationships, all monogamous. So I've been around the block a little bit, but I've also got the pleasure to work with a lot of married clients, and I see a lot of patterns. At the core, what do men most want and desire? Three things, as far as I can tell. And there's many more, but these are big ones. Respect, freedom, and legacy. So men want to be fucking respected. And at work, they get respect a lot of the time based on their performance and based on their what they handle. If they're handling business, they're getting respect from their boss, from the mates, the colleagues, whatever. Now at home, they come home, and if they're not polarized with the woman, they're not leading, they're not providing a safe space. There's not a lot of sexuality or emotion that's flowing freely. Well, what happens? The woman feels resentful. She might emasculate him. She might disrespect him. She might nag him. That's bucket one, right? Freedom. A lot of men feel trapped in their marriage. A lot of men feel trapped at their job. They fucking hate it. They're not enjoying themselves, but they're gritting their teeth and fucking sucking it up because they need to make money and pay the bills that come in every month. It's a big reality. Legacy. Most men want to be fathers. Some don't, which is fine. All men want to leave a legacy. Your legacy isn't just your children. It's how you lived. It's how you acted. It's how people relate to you. Some men are great artists and creators. They want to build something. They want to create something. This is key to the masculine consciousness. If they are prevented from that in any way by their partner, or even worse, they self-betray and they stop following what they most want to build and leave a legacy because of doubts, shame, blame, guilt coming from the feminine or within themselves, that can destroy marriage. That destroys the bedroom experience, because you don't want to have sex or open up vulnerably sexually to someone who doesn't respect your work, who doesn't want you to be free and doesn't want you to create and build what you're here to do. Even if that's from a subconscious wounding or an unconscious level of protection or defense, it's very rarely that the woman actually wants to cut the man down. And it's very rare that the man actually wants to control or abuse the woman. Most of it is happening underneath the hood based on, you know, childhood trauma, imprinting from their parents, societal bullshit beliefs from Hollywood or from whatever they're consuming that's giving them these ideas and these patterns.
Yeah, I immediately relate personally and definitely deal with the guys I'm coaching on all of those levels. Respect for first 12 years of marriage, it was like that was my port of call in arguments. It's like, oh, I just want you to fucking respect me. Like, can you just respect me? I didn't know of a ton of other emotions. I didn't have any tapped in capacity to know what my needs were, but it was respect. Why are you not respecting me? And the hurt that was causing me, the freedom, the legacy for Definite showed up for me as like, oh, just this disgruntled, resentful part, you know, inside of myself. Can you just get out of my fucking way? What I do recognize, I had no capacity to be grounded and express my needs and, you know, and own it. But it just immediately, when you categorize it like that, it makes so much sense. Coming from, you know, in coaching and in the podcast here, Kevin, I always come from a 100% extreme ownership perspective on the side of the guys. You know, definitely, and I want to really put this forward to guys listening in always again and again, you know, can your woman have wounds? Abso-fucking-lutely. You know, it's like wounded meets wounded. It's the human condition. I don't think anybody has gotten away with it. So, you know, in nodding and bowing to the female wounds, you know, are they alive? Do you have a capacity? Does every guy listening in have the capacity to recognize and go, well, actually, you know, her parents divorced, or, you know, she experienced sexual abuse, blah, blah, blah. That's having an impact. Yes. However, in part of this, I'd love to bake in a context if you're willing to play with it. It's like just to take that to one side and go, okay, well, that's horror work. We're dealing with the guys here. So assuming that some or all the guys listening in are resonating with, yeah, fuck, I don't have the levels of respect in my relationship. I don't have anywhere near, you know, the level of freedom. I'd love to, whatever their expressions of freedom, they're not having it. They're feeling trapped in marriage. And the point of legacy, you know, their capacity to create a legacy in the world without the hindrance. What are the main blind spots that you have seen that men have where they unwittingly get in their own way? As you know, what is it that guys don't realize? They're creating the obstacles external to themselves in the relationship. They're creating the circumstances where the woman can't respect him. They're looking for respect, but she can't respect him. They're looking for freedom, but she's like, her nervous system is like, with your, the way you're showing up, man, she mightn't have the words, but, and it might be really messy, but he's showing up in a way that is, she just can't feel that she trusts him to give him that freedom and the legacy as well. Yeah, could you speak to that? How are guys unwittingly cutting their own lifeblood in the relationship in terms of respect, freedom, and legacy?
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant framing and question, Mark. I mean, number one, it's cliche, but it's just true. It's just self-awareness, self-knowledge. If you don't even know what you want and you don't know what you're good at, or you haven't explored and like put your nose to the grindstone a bit as a man, it's going to be really hard to even start this question answer. So that's number one. How do you get that? I mean, you got to spend time alone. You got to spend time writing or reading, and you got to spend time in meditation, contemplation, prayer. Take your pick. Everyone's going to find their own way to those. Those are kind of the golden threads that I pulled on to get here. I was an ordinary man. I was a regular dude drinking fluoride in my water, eating GMOs, and I thought I was going to go into academia. So people pedestalize, you know, strong men, Jocko Willink, Joe Rogan, David Goggins, these like gods among men are fucking handling business. But if you talk to them and you listen to their stuff, read their books, listen to their podcasts, they'll tell you the same thing. They're ordinary men. And all they changed was A, they had self-knowledge, but more practically, discipline. More practically, leading their own life. The reason the woman often doesn't feel safe, like you said, or is testing you, pushing you, resentful, is because she doesn't feel like she's being led, or that there's a containment or structure. There's too much chaos. And so as a man, you can't just do that without doing it for yourself. And what does it come down to? Very practical things: your health, your fitness, your body, your diet, how you spend your time. What are your, you have to have a personal philosophy as a man, or a personal belief system that you have to create. If you were just handed something from your dad, and you know, God bless the fathers out there, they did the best they could, but there's flaws in it. There's trauma in it. There's stories in it that aren't even true. So you need to examine those. You need to take apart the bullshit that your operating system's running, right? Just like a computer. If you don't update and operate in a good way, the OS, you're going to be running outdated stuff. And a lot of guys are, without ever questioning it. A lot of men just need more structure in their life. When they say something, they need to actually do it and start with very small things. Like the classic Jordan Peterson, you know, clean up your room, make your bed. It's a small win. Little stuff like that. When I talk to clients who are making 6-7 figures in corporate and they feel like they're handling business, and they are, and I acknowledge them for that. Meanwhile, it's like, let me look in your fridge. Let me look at your calendar. Let me look at your bank account. It's a shit show. There's no order here. There's no structure. And then they wonder why their relationships are failing. It does start with those things. They're all seeds that blossom.
Yeah, the long list of the small stuff. I think that just that point for me was what transformed my relationship with my queen. The guys listening in will know the context, but since we've conversed, I've had like an absolute marital breakdown, breakthrough moment where it was like my queen was looking at me. It's like it was dead emotionally, sexually. And part of the revival, I can't overemphasize, is on the small stuff. But it's not the small stuff. I think the small stuff for me, like I hear you, is like, was the major shit for my queen. Well, my mind was like, hey, you know, it's like, yeah, I didn't make the bed this morning. You know, my mind, that disgruntled inner child, it's like, sort of like, mom, why was mommy just giving out to me again? You know, it was like this undealt with, disgruntled inner child that didn't feel tended to, didn't feel loved, didn't feel accepted. But when I realized, okay, well, that's my shit, separate that. All of this small stuff is actually major stuff. You know, I wasn't making the bed. It's like, yeah, I didn't put the fucking seat back down on the toilet. What the fuck? Like, are we really talking about this again? My mind was saying it's small stuff. My woman was like, it's small stuff, but it's fucking major because you're thinking it's small stuff. And in thinking it's small stuff, you're making me seem irrelevant to you. So I, from a personal perspective, it's like, yeah, the discipline on all these teeny tiny bits of self-leadership, it makes so much sense. The personal philosophy, could you speak to that? What does that look like? Because I don't think, well, for myself personally, I've went through that process recently where over the last few years, it's like I went from unconscious competence. My marriage had transformed massively. It was beautiful. And I was like, well, what does this look like? What am I actually doing? And I went to conscious competence where it's like I got like the 16 points. What am I systematically doing? But what would that look like for guys listening in that they mightn't have even ever questioned forming a personal philosophy? Like, you know, I'll outsource it to Buddhism. I'll outsource it to Christianity. I'll outsource it to the Bible, which they're all beautiful philosophies. But is there any process to approaching writing a personal life philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, I should back up and say, you know, having a personal philosophy is pretty deep. It takes a lifetime to create. Like I mean, mine is infantile, but I'm thinking about it a lot because I also just love philosophy. Really, it's about a value system, which you need before that. So what are the core values that you want to live and die by? Because you're all going to die. And if you witness that and realize that deeply, you'll realize that a life with values or pillars or like important things that are non-negotiable for you, it's got to be there. That's part of what a man has to do in his life, is create himself. So you need to understand what your values are. Like some of my values are, you know, extreme ownership, sovereignty, creativity, the importance of community, tribe, brotherhood. These are non-negotiable values that will be in my life till I die. And they're going to be in my relationship too. And I'm clear on them. This is the big thing. When a woman is testing you, when a colleague or a brother is shit testing you or competing with you, when life just throws you a bunch of, you know, tough shit, you'll be tested. And if you aren't clear about the values on which you're basing your actions and your behavior, you're in for a tough ride. And you'll figure it out on the way. Like a lot of people unconsciously, like you say, the unconscious competence, they already have these things. The power is pulling them up out of the depths and being clear, writing them down, speaking to them, getting feedback on them, asking for feedback. And once you have it, you can relax. You no longer have to reinvent the wheel every time a conflict happens. In your marriage, you never are going to be like fully lost. You might get lost temporarily, but you'll always be able to fall back on these things. And it becomes a life philosophy or belief system that you have to create. And of course, you should borrow from the ancient masters and wisdom traditions. Like for me, Taoism, Zen Buddhism, you know, these are deeply meaningful to me. Even Christianity in its pure form. You know, there's real wisdom out there. So definitely pull from mentors, philosophies, systems, religions, wisdom teachings. But you need to make it your own. It needs to be fitting into your life and your relationship. Because if it doesn't work in your life and your relationship, then what's the point? Like, what are you going to do about that? How are you going to take action?
Two guys are coming to mind. You know, I've been obsessing on peak performance and that. I was mainly that for years until I found men's work, going more deeper into the emotions. But there was two stories. I think if my memory serves me well, I jot them down here. I think it was Pete Carroll. Was he an American footballer? And excuse the as many stateside guys listening in. If was it this whatever Seahawks, some top NFL team or sports team in the States. And then there was famous, it was John Wooden. So two super, super successful coaches that ended up performing at like the highest level in management and in coaching. And their success, I always note, like their success came after they wrote down their personal philosophy. It was John Wooden wrote down, and it's famous, is like, you know, when he got his system, like one of the things was like he taught these top end basketball stars how to put on their socks. That became a known part of his personal philosophy. And I was like, it sounds ridiculous, but it was like he knew that worked. You put your socks on correctly, you didn't blister through the season, you were able to perform, you know, 99% of the time. It fucking worked. And it's just amazing. It's like two super successful guys. They obviously had mentors. They obviously, you know, probably inherited lots of wisdom of like the great coaches before them. But their success skyrocketed when they did the work, like you said, like they found solitude and they jotted down the journal and said, what is it that works for me? So yeah, that I think there could be an insanely powerful process for every guy listening in, because what I find myself, and like the really just going deep on this point of, you know, the personal philosophy idea, what was funny for me, Kevin, is like, you know, the first 12 years of marriage, yeah, there was beautiful stuff, but you know where it was unwittingly going to the cliff face was there was tons of wisdom I had. I knew what worked, I knew what didn't work. But I never slowed down to reflect upon it and realize, yeah, well, fuck, when I don't use the mundane but important example, when I don't make the bed, well, every single time, that just irritates my woman. If I reflected on that and wrote it down and went, well, if every single time that, you know, brings up irritation for her, just stop fucking doing it. No matter what my opinion is. It's like, I can have the opinions like, oh, it's just a small thing, but like it irritates her. So the value is not lost in me. Just when you brought up the personal philosophies and, you know, guys listening in, because every guy listening in will know in the unique marriage as it shows up for him on a daily basis, there's certain things that just doesn't work. And when I say it doesn't work, if it brings like a display of disconnection on your woman's face in her and how she emotionally shows, well, then it clearly doesn't work. Irrespective of your opinion, it's not working to create connection. So if you just could get black and white in an initial version 1.0, that document in itself can transform your entire relationship.
Totally. It's very practical. It's very pragmatic. It's very empirical. Like you said, you can test it. You can test what works and what doesn't. It's very simple. It's not easy because you have to humble up and admit your bullshit and admit what doesn't work, which is painful and is will continue to be painful. It never gets easier because we always have a new blind spot. And this is where helping that process is other men pointing it out. Hopefully older men, peers that are like, hey, brother, I don't think this is working for you. I actually think this is bullshit. And you have to hear that and be like, okay, what do I think? Well, all the guys said this is bullshit. I think it's right. Are they all wrong? Or are you, you know, ready to level up, right? And actually have a breakdown to break through there.
What's the main thing, the main wounding that is standing in a man's way of showing up humbly in relationship with his woman?
Probably entitlement on some level. Entitlement to the woman's energy, entitlement to her sexuality, entitlement to her compliance, whatever. It's a very deep wound and pattern that's been put into the masculine mind that women are subservient. Most women don't want that. Now, most women will act that out to up to a certain point to get their needs met, right? They want to be provided for. They'll transact with sexuality. They want to be heard and seen and acknowledged. They'll transact with physical beauty, whatever. A lot of transactional stuff happens there, right? In the David Data, you know, era, it's like first and second stage stuff, right? It's very much entitlement to each other's energy, expectations, codependency. And it's tough. I can't even imagine how tough it must be in marriage. I'm not married. I will be married one day, but it's intense. Now, as a man, if you really know yourself and you know how to set healthy boundaries and you have a North Star, so you're moving towards goals and you have a mission and purpose, you know, you're going to be pretty well set up to avoid some of those pitfalls. So it's not about playing defense, to continue with the sports analogies. You got to play offense. You need to be putting the bat on the ball and moving forward. So you can't play defense and try to like stop all the fires. Like the feminine is chaos. She's going to shift. She's going to change moment to moment. Now you see her, now you don't. It's just going to happen. So once you accept that and you can start playing offense towards your mission, towards strengthening your body, your mind, your brotherhood, your bank account, etc., it's all going to pay forward.
Immediately when you said the word entitlement, and I've never come upon it in relating. It's like what came up immediately in my mind was like, oh, fuck, that's you're treating your woman like your mother. Because, you know, with the mother, there is an entitlement. You know, there's a natural biological entitlement. It's like she is meant to. I mean, every single time it's the natural, when things are happening naturally, there's an entitlement to her breast, to food, to nurturing, to, you know, the attachment needs, whatever those attachment needs are in the moment. It's based on entitlement. It just came true. It's like, whoa, because I know deepest wounds for myself and with guys I'm coaching, it's this idea of, you know, our wives should show up, but the should show, anything that comes after, oh, she should, aka the entitlement, it's actually based on we haven't initiated outside of our mother-son relationship. We're still playing out this subconscious pattern that just was coming through me. The word entitlement is so apt, really feeling into that. what ways, and you know, having met men's work, I do, you know, fully agree with and encourage guys, you know, if you don't have a men's group, seek out a good quality bunch of men that like you can trust with your heart, with your wounds. Like it's probably like a pinnacle healing need for any man that's in marriage. What tactful ways can men consciously work with these beliefs that they're entitled? What is a way that you can tactfully soften that and start shifting to? I'm actually curious if entitlement is like that wounded way that doesn't work, what wording would you put? Like, where do guys need to shift? So if feeling entitled is not a positive way and it's all transactional, what do we need to look for ideally? Is there another word or description where we need to shift to go towards?
Yeah, I mean, the first word that came up for me was devotion. So devotion is on a higher level and a higher plane of attachment and love and all those things, right? And this is the paradox, right? Like I'm working with a few guys right now who just got divorced and they're having a tough time with their ex-wife and also dating, redialing in respect and all these things. And I think it kind of sums this up. When you're entitled to her energy, mainly her sex, right? Like what do most men want? Like your working class kind of guy, they want to get laid and they want respect from their woman. It's pretty fucking simple. What's the trade-off? Well, they bust their ass and they work hard and they bring home money and they provide. They pay rent, they pay bills, put food on the table. It's classic. It's ancient. There's nothing wrong with it. It's actually sacred, that dynamic. The problem is when there's expectations. And then when the expectations aren't met, there's emotional or physical violence and disdain, right, and resentment. So the classic scenario is that the man's treating the woman like his mother. It's like the butterfly that lands on your hand and you want its energy. The butterfly is beautiful. You know, sexuality is fucking epic. It's one of the greatest God-given gifts, if not the greatest. And so you try to capture it, right? You crush the butterfly or you trap it. The man of power, the man of devotion, the man with self-knowledge gives his woman complete freedom and devotion. He loves her from a distance, even if that's what she needs or he needs in the moment, and just handles his own shit. He's self-led. He goes after what he knows to be true. He gives, doesn't always expect to receive in return. And then what happens? Does she forget about him, become bored because you're not trying to control? No, you become irresistible. She wants to jump in bed with you. You gain more respect from men and women. And a lot of men forget this because this is what they were doing when they were single and they met their wife. And then it gets lost in the relationship because of the comfort and the patterns that are mother-son based that creep back in. And if you're not stoic and vigilant, they will take over. And it's nobody's fault, right? Like our fathers didn't figure this out. Their fathers didn't figure this out. It's been a long time of men just fucking suffering and missing the mark here. And they're doing the best they can. So there's nobody to point a finger at. You look in the mirror and just, all right, I'm gonna shift the pattern. I'm gonna break the chains. That's the key here. That's the mindset you have to have.
What I'm curious about is, like, you know, guys listening in, and it makes profound sense. Yet, you know, a lot of guys will be coming from a wounded perspective. Will be coming from, yeah, I can recognize what Kevin is saying. Fuck yeah, there probably is some mother-son stuff going on. Yes, entitlement. But as of today, as of listening in now, fuck me, it gets really highly charged and it gets argumentative and conflict comes up. And no matter how much my conscious mind fucking knows this shit, I get caught in the pattern. And I don't know how I end up disconnecting so much repeatedly with my woman. It's paining me, it's hurting her. But I don't know how to break free of that in the moment of conflict. For guys that have that awareness, you know, that they're in a conflict pattern, but just they don't know how to break it. What advice or guidance can you give to those guys when they're in the heat of the moment? And it's like, okay, it's go time. I'm going into closure. What's the highest level or the simplest steps guys can take to to soften that pattern, to start breaking it so they can welcome in more connection with their woman beyond the wounds.
Yeah, super practical stuff. And, you know, it takes balls to do it, especially if the woman is feeling unsafe, but it works. I've seen it work many times personally and with clients. Number one is take it nonverbal. So stop talking. And there's multiple layers to this. One layer is, as a man, you just listen. Even if she's like, you're a piece of shit, you have a small dick, whatever, you just listen. And eventually the energy will shift because she'll finally stop and be like, whoa, he's not defending. He's not yelling back. He's just listening. It works. Not easy. Not easy at all, but very simple. The other one is both of you go nonverbal. Just make eye contact. Or if you can't make eye contact, that's uncomfortable. Sit together quietly and you can face the same direction. It doesn't even have to be a meditation. Just stop talking. Now, if touch is available, touch is great. Very gentle, like back rub or massage, or even just like, you know, whatever. Like if you're stuck in the pattern, take charge and offer a practice instead and go nonverbal. That's number one. If it's too intense, you probably need to take space. So take it from a place of choosing and power instead of storming out like, well, I'm going to the pub or fuck you, you know, like be like, these are the magic words, right? I'm feeling overwhelmed. I statement, owning the emotion. I'm not abandoning you. No asking for permission either. I'm going to take space, or I'm going to spend the evening, the weekend, the week with my family, with my brothers in nature, whatever. And just take it from a place of power. Even if she resists and fights it, or you feel like, oh no, I need to, like, I'm going to lose her. What will happen, we call this the polarity pause, is you pause the dynamic, you go into your own energy, you get back to the things you know and love, working out, eating well, you know, whatever your practices are, feeling the space of the distance, and it resets. And then you come back with full power and intention and show up the way you actually want to show up and know you want to show up without the attack defense pattern that's been playing out. It had a lot of momentum. You got to break its momentum and actually take space physically.
I love you're cognizant of the magical words. I'm feeling overwhelmed, or like, I suppose guys listening in, we like whatever the emotion is, I'm feeling whatever emotion, will say overwhelm. I'm not abandoning you. That just struck me to my core, because every last single argument and conflict I've ever had with my queen, I mean, that's the root thing. She's fearing that this argument means I'm finally falling out of love with her. I'm finally at my limit as a man. I'm going to fuck off. It's like, that's it. But to explicitly bring it in, it's like, this does not mean I'm abandoning you. I'm conscious. I have this emotional charge. I have a need to go to find some space for myself. But it's not creating any damage. I think that's what's coming up for me. Like, those words are like, it's bringing it conscious. But there's no damage. There's a given foundation of intent to connect and to prevent ruinous disconnection at whatever cost. It's like to keep that connection. So I can really feel the healing nature in those words. They're amazing words. There's these moments where I'm like, I hope you guys are listening into this. It's like, that's incredible. It's just, you know, from a strategic point of view, and I think this is, there's a sacred part. I know we're working with guys, you know, when you get these tools, when you get a tool in your toolbox that works, so use it. Really use it. It's an amazing tool. The part of person relevance, when you said about touch, what was coming up for me, Kevin, listening in there, is like, there again, going back years, I'm getting better at it. But I know there's times when I get caught in conflict, it's like the last one emotion that comes up that I've had to get very real with is a repulsion. It's like, I don't fucking want to go near my woman. And yet when you said there, it's like the simplicity of just be quiet and go over and touch. That has become my touchstone. It's like, I've just become aware. It's like, it doesn't matter what your head is saying. Actually, your go time, Mark, is when you're feeling repulsion and your whole head is like, I don't fucking want to go to the far side of this table now. humility, just shut the fuck up, go to the far side of the table and put a hand on her shoulder. She melts. Again, as I suppose, is that abandonment. She's not being abandoned. No matter what's going through my head, it forms that connection. It's potent, potent ways you're putting it forward. Stop talking, sit together. Touch base with her, and then own your space. Ultimately, if it gets too intense.
Yeah. Again, this is stuff you probably use dating unconsciously. You probably used in courtship, but for some reason, the relationship, we throw it out the window and just think we can talk our way through everything. Not going to happen, right? It's not going to happen. And the more you bring practices like this consciously into the relationship, and as the man, as the masculine, you lead them, you initiate them, you bring them into the space. Even if, yeah, I mean, even me, like, I've been doing this for a while, like 8, 9 years being geeking out on this stuff, I still have resistance. I know what you're talking about. The repulsion, the like, why do I have to fucking do it? It's just this weird thing that just comes up. And I still do it. And it gets results. So I know it works. And I'm just like, oh, there's that thing again. There's the little boy or the angry teenager or whatever that's talking shit. And I still love him up. That doesn't mean he's going to stop me, though. He's not going to change how I operate. Because it gets results and it feels good and it creates intimacy.
Yeah, what's coming through me there now is like it's that classic thing where it's not what you want to do or what you don't want to do. It's what you need to do. You know, that part of where our mind is so tricky, where it's like, I don't want to do that now. It's like, I don't fucking want to go to far side of the table, or I don't want to say I'm sorry. I don't want to say, it's like, that's cool. But I find that the softening wisdom over the years for myself is just, yeah, well, just put that fucking comment on the shelf. It's not working. So it's like just what you need to do. Going beyond that, and like there's incredibly potent tools there, conversational tools and tools for navigating conflict, which makes all other conversations easy. In terms of, and I know it's all related, so I'm not saying that, you know, conversation dynamics and then sexual dynamics are different. That would be making like the bedroom slip. But what are, you know, practical in the arena ideas to support guys? I suppose it's more from a level of habits or rituals. What are the highest leverage connection rituals that guys can bring in where, okay, I'm married like 5, 10 years, whatever. It's like the sexual connection just isn't there in the busyness, in the chores, in the responsibilities. There can be parenting, et cetera, et cetera. It can be a real struggle to keep that sexual fire alive, to keep that connection, that deep intimate connection. There can be tons of love. Actually, a lot of guys listening in, I've heard, it's like they actually say they have a lovely marriage, actually really loved a woman. There's not a lot of, you know, insane drama. A lot of guys say to me, it's like, actually, you know, we get on really well, but there's just the heat, you know, like back when we were younger, back in the early days of the relationship, it's like it just was fucking easier, you know, like we had the weekend off, so we just ended up fucking making love for, you know, hours of time. But it's like, Mark, fucking kids in on top of it, fucking, you know, it's my business now, or, you know, like my wife, she's now doing her studies, is the, and then in-laws, and we're minding, you know, the parents, natural time of life, minding parents. A ton of pressure can come in and snuff out that sacred need, and it just seems that it just peters out. What are the highest leverage rituals that guys can bring in that can help turn the tide on that?
Yeah. I mean, I was saying this to a client actually the other day, and this is a brutal truth, but it's fucking true. The same way that you make time to do all the chores, get on every Zoom meeting, stay late to work with your boss, you'll never miss that World Cup match because you make it happen. That's how you have to treat lovemaking. That's how you have to treat your marriage. Because it's just like, if I had a nickel for every time I'm talking to men or women about polarity, and I'm like, well, you know, actually the sexual flame never has to die. and you can actually have great sex to your deathbed. And you can be, they're like, well, that's easy for you to say because I have this bullshit list of excuses, which is all true. And, you know, again, I'm not a parent. I'm not married. I'm not working a 9-to-5. I've created my lifestyle to be very open and very free intentionally. And I made a lot of sacrifices for it. You know, I made trade-offs. That being said, I don't care if you're working on Wall Street, whatever, you can make time. Your calendar's sacred. You can manage your time. The real reason, which you don't want to hear, is that you're not prioritizing it. It's actually not as important as you say it is because you're not prioritizing. So now that that's out of the way, let's put the bullshit excuses aside and let's just get down to the practicals. You need to make time, which means you need to plan. And as the man, you can do this. You can strategize and make the plan. Get your woman on board too. Get her on the same team. A lot of women out there, like in my relationship, I have vision and planning and power, but my woman is actually the organizational master. And I just like, I'm like, please, like, help me organize shit. And she does it. We team up. So help your wife team up with you on this, but you need date nights. The basic model is date again. So that means not doing the same old shit you always do. That means new restaurants, new experiences, getting a massage together, going to a workshop together, going into nature, doing scavenger hunts, experimenting with, you know, whatever, shibari, kink, BDSM, tantra, breathwork, yoga, take your pick, go nuts. The more fun, comfortable it feels, the better for both of you. And just commit to that. It's a very basic thing. This can be one night a week. It's very simple. That more advanced level, which, you know, in this relationship now with my woman now, it's the best it's ever been. I've been doing this in multiple relationships, but this one is like, it's on another level, is the relationship check-in or board meeting, or whatever you want to call it. We call it our king and queen ritual. This can be weekly, this can be monthly, whatever, but it's an intentional time. Candles, incense, music, cooking dinner, whatever, like really dropping in. It can be in the bedroom, it can be not, it can be out. Fully check in. What's alive in the relationship? What's working? What's not working? What needs to shift? What are your desires? What are you really yearning for? Lay it all out. Listen. So give, receive. And then you go into a ritual of some kind. So this can be touch. It can be massage, which is so easy and powerful. It can be sexual. Most of the time it will be if you're actually being vulnerable, because it's just the desire will build up. And that space is without the kids. You can afford a new iPhone. You can afford a babysitter once in a while. If you're working 80 hours a week and making a lot of money, great. You can take a few hours off and set aside this time. And just, it's on the calendar. Both of you know it. It's sacred. So it can't be broken without prior consent from both parties. Just like a normal meeting or anything else in your life. It's that simple. But it can be rocky. It can bring up trauma. It can be tough to commit to, because what you'll discover is that you've actually been avoiding intimacy for some reason. It's not that you're not attracted to your wife. It's that there's some stuff in the way, and this is how you clear it out.
That is so practical. I know you mentioned like it's a higher level deal beyond the date night, and yet it's so simple. You know, it's like if you're running a company, you can't do it without meetings with the stakeholders. It's like you've got to be on the same hymn sheet. We get that in business. We get that in the office. We get that like the sports club. I mean, so many things that guys there, again, the legacy and the freedom and, you know, meeting those core masculine needs. We do it in other circumstances. But just the simple idea of scheduling in a regular meeting. I think what comes up for me is like what the magic is in that is like those fucking meetings are going to happen no matter what. But the difference in this is like, does the meeting only happen when the fire of frustration in your woman, in yourself, just gets to the point? It's like, okay, now we're having a meeting. Now it's become a priority because we can't fucking tolerate each other's company beyond this. We're having a meeting. The meeting is going to happen no matter what. That's how it worked out for myself. But like, this is like just going, okay, well, if it's going to happen anyway, you might as well just proactively have the meeting. It's on your terms. It's more organized. And if it happens regularly, well, those fires and frustrations, well, they're not going to build to insane levels unnecessarily. Keep it simple, I suppose. That's the simplicity is what I'm seeing is the genius in that schedule idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the Jordan Peterson thing. It's like there's a dragon. You know there's a dragon. It's in a cave somewhere. It will come down and burn down the village if you just wait and avoid it. And that dragon is codependency and loss of desire and infidelity and all those things. It exists. You know it exists. We know the statistics. We know all the info. But yeah, you got to go to the cave and fuck that thing up and get ahead of it. And like, it's awkward. It might be hard at first. Once you do it once and break the seal, you'll actually get excited by it and you'll be driven to do it.
Yeah. Kevin, one thing that, you know, you mentioned earlier, and thanks for leading transparency with full transparency, you know, it's like your relationships, have been monogamous and, you know, for the vast majority, the guys listening in, it's a monogamous, exclusive, committed relationship that we're talking about. I just want to paraphrase for anybody that might be outside of that. That's absolutely fine. I'm just speaking to what most guys' ideal is the value is like a monogamous, exclusive relationship. One challenge I've definitely experienced as a man has been, you know, attraction to other women outside of that. And the shadow, and in my case, you know, the amount of shame. I know it's not just exclusive to Irish culture. There's definitely Roman Catholic upbringing, church, socially speaking, definitely frowned upon. I mean, you know, it's like you've just have your wife, and beyond that, anything that comes up in your nervous system, it's you're a bad man. You know, like just root base. What have you found within your own experience of that as a man, as a lover, showing up in a monogamous, committed, exclusive relationship and in clients and in guys in workshops around the world? What's the most tactful, healthy way for guys to navigate that inner experience? Is that you have your woman, you fucking love her, you don't actually want to fuck outside of relationship, but there's this primal body in you that is like, when you go into another room and you see a sexy woman, it's like it's fucking telling you it's go time. How do guys manage do those powerful forces together in a conscious way?
Yeah, it's ever present. It's real. Biologically, it makes sense. You're meant to spread seed and have multiple partners on a animalistic level. Doesn't mean that that's what you choose, but it's there. There's precedent for it. That's fine. If you make it known and consciously don't hide it or shy away from it, it loses its power. And you have to have discernment around this. That doesn't mean every time you see an attractive woman, you tell your wife and like try to play that game. I've seen men try to do that. Doesn't work. It creates more tension. But if it's in the space, it's known, it feels very strong, and you get out ahead of it. Yeah, it's just bring it up, own it. Even if she gets upset, which she will, that's okay. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It doesn't mean the relationship is weak. It actually means that you have healthy desire. And also, it's there to teach you something. If you're really attracted to someone outside your relationship, it's because they're mirroring something that you're not getting in the relationship most of the time. So you just bring it back. All right, what am I not showing up as? What am I not getting? What are my needs? It'll help you discover your desire, because that's what it is. It's just desire. It's Eros. Eros is intelligent life force just pointing around. Connects people. It's what makes you want to have babies and mate and bond. It's real. It's love. It's a universal force. It's not random, and it's not stupid. It's not like just, oh, you're just boys will be boys thinking with your cock again. It's like, no. There's intelligence there. What is actually happening? And if you take that perspective and get curious about it instead of guilty or shameful, it'll actually unlock more intimacy in your partnership that's committed.
I'm really passionately curious about that idea. Like I get it immediately what you're saying. It's like, okay, it's reflecting something back, but how does that look on a practical level? Like how would can you give me some sort of like a tangible practical experience of like within yourself or a client example of a lived out experience of, you know, that fantasy desire external and a deeper truth that was live within a guy?
a lot of the time for men, it's literally comes down to you're just not expressing your needs, or you're not even in touch with your primal desires. So it'll come out through seeing a hot woman, or come out through porn or something else, because you're not owning it in the relationship. Most men are shocked to find that when they just own their kinks, desires, whatever energy they're craving with their partner is more than happy to go there with them most of the time. Because you didn't ask for it. You didn't own it. You didn't claim it. So a lot of men cheat because they don't feel safe to do that in their own relationship. It's actually they're playing defense. It's not that they have so much desire that they, you know, it's because they didn't have the balls or the willingness, which is fair enough, to claim it in their own marriage or relationship, which there might be good reasons for that. You might be in an incompatible relationship. So that's the other side of this. If the attraction's happening a lot and there's a lot of that pull, it might be because you're in the wrong relationship. And that's okay. It doesn't mean you're a fuck up. It means you need to do the right thing and have integrity about how you go about that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned like the, call it the elephant in the room, porn. And like you, to put it forward, my personal experience with porn was, you know, I had a severe porn addiction. I mean, masturbating during college for like, it was like 5-6 times per evening. So it was like, it was really caught in my system. And why I'm bringing it up here is, you know, I have come to a personal perspective. Porn does not work in my relationship. And definitely my queen is like, Mark, if you do that, like, it's off. So from both sides, you know, it just has had such a profoundly negative effect on my nervous system. I'm still undoing the really deep subconscious knots of that level of porn addiction. So I just want to lead forward with that. Yet at the same time, it's like, I don't want my bias and I don't want my perspective to be like a truth for every guy listening in. Definitely, you know, with clients and guys in men's groups, you know, porn can have really negative effects on relationships. Yet from your more awake, dare I say, enlightened perspective on masculine and feminine dynamics, Kevin, are there times when porn can have a healthy impact on relationship? Are there ways where, you know, couples can use porn to keep the fire there, to keep to just keep things alive? Can it function for the relationship in any context?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I'm not anti-porn. I'm just anti the porn human trafficking and like the industry around it and how men use it, which is just comes from the lack of elders, rites of passage, and healthy male role models who teach about sexuality. That's the simple truth of it. We live in a world where sexuality is sold to us in the media, but it's also repressed everywhere else, which is a weird paradox for a child, a young boy in particular. Young women also have their own version of this, but porn mainly affects men. So, I mean, the real thing about porn is like erotic art, for example. So erotic art, erotica, conscious, ethical produced porn, whether it's images or video, that's amazing. We should support people who do that, especially if it's coming from a wholesome place of like real love. It's if the couple's in love and there's energy there. Yeah, like fucking, that's awesome. I don't want to, like, I want that to be in the world. That's sacred. We shouldn't be afraid of our sexuality. Now, that being said, most of the porn sites, how most men use it, myself included, it's disconnecting. You do it alone. You do it with this like dopamine fix energy. It's not good. You don't feel good after, you know? You know, when I was still using it, I got to the point where I wouldn't ejaculate to porn. So I would like practice, you know, microcosmic orbit and like tantra basically solo, but still using porn. And even then, it's like the imagery and the intensity, and most of it is very toxic and fake. Most men are shocked that women don't actually act like that, because most porn is completely fucking fake. And you can watch these like documentaries about it, how it's made. It's really sad. A lot of porn stars commit suicide. A lot of porn stars have failed relationships. The amount of lube they have to use should tell you everything. Those women aren't having a good time. Like, those men aren't naturally, you know, looking like this. There's so much fake bullshit going on. So on that level, we don't want to support fakeness. You don't want to bring fakeness into your relationship. Simple as that. Do I know couples that have used it to enhance a relationship? Yeah. Do I think that it should be used as a tool, like training wheels to the real stuff, like deep intimacy, breath work, tantra, sacred sexuality, and sex magic together? Yes, it's training wheels. If you need that to invite the Eros and the spark, awesome, no shame. But don't kid yourself that it's enhancing the relationship in a massive way. Watching other people have sex on a screen when you have a beautiful woman in front of you, that, you know, this is what I always tell men. It's like, if you're watching porn and you have like a fantasy or whatever, why aren't you just claiming that and owning that in your relationship? You'd be surprised. The woman probably wants it too, but you need to fucking lead it.
And like, what an heroic gesture. You know, it's like the hero archetype. I mean, every single story that this goes back to me is like, it just gets to a rock of sense. It gets me turned on, but like turned on as a man, not necessarily like sexually erect in my cock, but like turned on is like the heroic gestures. You know, what you're saying there is like, it feels to me, it's like, well, that's the heroic gesture. That's the call. You know, why not just show up in the bedroom and be that guy? You know, not act it out, act out in your own space. It was actually one thing that, and I think that's why my nervous system, I can feel actually like getting switched on the topic, as a result of porn addiction from within myself for years and a back of like real deep sexual shame. I found it really difficult to perform in bed with my queen. Really difficult. I mean, erectile dysfunction, or like what's called, it's like my cock wisdom was working perfectly, but to give a context what I'm talking about, and it can still show up if I have to be consciously aware of it. But one thing that really worked was, okay, what about from the fantasies? You know, what if I just showed up and acted as if I was that guy? In moments, I couldn't identify as a great lover. I was like, my mind was like, you're fucking shit, you're crap. I mean, you're useless, you're repeated, but there was some safety in it. It was like, if I role play this and imagine like I'm just a fucking stud. And I played with it. And I remember like role playing, not being me, like I was a great lover. It's like, can I fucking role play? What would a great lover, how would he come in? Well, he wouldn't fucking come in with your eyes looking at the floor like you always do, Mark, because you're scared shitless, like you're a rabbit in the headlights, sort of like, and that's not a fucking turn on to my woman. And I still play with that. It's coming a bit more natural. I think my nervous system has got up to some bit of momentum in recent years where it's like, okay, I can naturally just do this without playing that. But it definitely is useful for me. I just want to bring that forward as an idea that for guys, it's been working for me in like really intensely shamed and wounded perspectives to get that bit of movement going. Kevin, coming in, we're becoming into the landing. We've like sort of maybe 10 minutes classically with the interview length that we normally play with. Are there any parts of the conversation where we haven't went? Are there any, I want to sort of leave it to your spontaneous wisdom. What parts of conscious relating have not been spoken to, or ideas or distinctions that you feel could be of deep value to guys listening in?
Yeah, this one's coming up a lot with clients right now, and I don't know if it's systemic. I suspect it is. It's just a lack of brotherhood, male bonding. And on the same side with a woman, like when a couple comes to me, or a man or a woman who's dating or married or whatever, it doesn't matter. And they're like struggling with something. First questions are, okay, who are your closest people and what are their relationships like? Do you have a support network? Oh, your woman says she doesn't get along with other women and has only male friends. It's a red flag. Oh, you're a man and you don't feel safe with men's work because you think it's bullshit and all your friends are female. That's a red flag. Now, all that being said, there's anomalies always. None of these are hard and fast rules, but they are strong trends. So a lot of couples stop prioritizing brotherhood and sisterhood and friendships, bonding, once they get really close, which is natural. There's a part of that cycle, right? In the honeymoon, where you just want to be around each other all the time. And that's awesome. At some point, you're going to need the village. The community, the village never goes away. You always will need it, because that's how we are as humans. That's our makeup. It's our DNA. But again, it's a dragon. It's going to come and burn down your marriage if you don't prioritize it. So might as well get out ahead of it and be proactive. It doesn't have to look like formal men's work. Although, as you've said, and I know it's changed my life, it's extremely powerful to get informal, dropped in, real men's work. And there's tons of groups out there that are doing it. I mean, I've been working with the European Men's Movement, which is, you know, based in Denmark, Germany. I think we might have spoken about it, but those guys are doing amazing work. You know, there's a lot of this stuff happening all over the world. And people are like, well, Kevin, it's easy for you to say there's none of this stuff near me. It's like, that's bullshit. You'd be shocked how many men's circles there are. And online, even if you can't be there in person, there are so many that would welcome you in. Sacred Sons, the Mankind Project, Rising Brotherhood. You know, there's so, I can just name a laundry list. Now, obviously, I'm close in, so I know all of them, but they didn't drop in my lap. I had to go find them. So that being said, you know, one of the keys to relationship is having brotherhood as a man. Mentorship, obviously, is part of that too. You want a strong male mentor and elder in your life. That one can be a little harder to find, but at minimum, have your bros, have your mates. Don't just, you know, crack beers and watch the game. Don't just talk shit about your woman and your job. Do something meaningful. Go into nature together. Go hike. You know, go shoot some bows and arrows. Throw some hatchets. Go play sports. Talk about shit. Be real. Love on each other. Like, touch each other. Don't be all afraid to give another man a hug or rub his back, or like really be with other men and be fucking celebrating masculinity. Mm. It's indirect, but that will make your marriage, you're with your woman, your masculine feminine polarity, 10x.
Yeah. Having lived out the experience of what that means, I totally get it. I didn't know I was lacking brotherhood until I went to my first men's group. And as a result, like, the only reason I went to the men's group, and this is classic, I found this in men's groups, is like so many times, you know, they, when a new guy comes in, part of the ritual in the group I've been in, is like, you know, just as you introduce yourself to the new guy, is like, oh, how did you find men's work? What brought you here? And like, what's the number one insight that has come out since joining men's work? The amount of men that have found men's work because they got divorced, because the love of their life up and left, because the intimate relationship fell apart. That's how they found men's work, which really speaks to, that's just an unmet need. One of the, I jotted it down straight away when you said it, because it just brought so much potency in it, is, you know, that question that you ask clients when they come in, who are your closest people? And the genius part is, and what are their relationships like? That's fucking crucial. Because so many times, I think some guys listening in can be like, oh, I've got my bros. You know, it's like, but that question, like, what are their relationships like? Because I have found that to be so toxic sometimes in my experience, where it's like, I did open up in the beginning. I wasn't in men's work, but it's like the guys that were available to me, and I opened up about relationship. And I soon found, it's like, wow, they're fucking giving advice, but I mean, they're projecting what I now have the conscious language is like, they're projecting their undealt with shit. Thereafter, I was sharing like, hey, just, you know, have this conflict, you know, like I was looking for some advice to go outside of conflict. All of a sudden it was like this brain dump of, man, that's fucking out of whack. Like, what the fuck is she? It's like, they were beating up on my wife. And it was like, that was a shock to my system. It's like, wow, that's not what I was looking for. And it was like coming away going, well, I'm not going to share with those guys. So I just bring guys awareness to the potency of what you said there. It's like, be conscious with who you share with, and you'll soon find, you know, like you've got to get guys that they love their wife. You know, if it's in marriage, like they love their wife, they're showing up with great intention for connection. It's not that they don't have to be human, but, you know, don't make sure that there's guys there that aren't just going to brain dump their own undealt with shit on you and on your woman and on your relationship. It's just incredible advice there.
It's so true. I mean, the classic thing where it's like you are the sum of the five people you spend the time with. A lot of that is the relationships. If all the people you know, your close brothers, are single, dating, treating women like sexual objects, talking shit, how do you think that's going to affect your committed relationship? I see it all the time where a man is isolated because he actually doesn't feel safe to bring relationship stuff to the men's circle of brotherhood because he knows what he's going to get if he shares it. He's going to get shit on. Mm-hmm. And so if the men around you aren't a safe place for that, need to audit, update, shift who you're spending time with. And that can be painful because you might have to let go of some of the relationships that you thought like, oh, I know this person, this is my guy, he's so-and-so, and he shows up in this way. Well, you might not be correct about that. And are you willing to have an uncomfortable conversation? People don't want to.
Yeah, it's getting real. That's really fucking uncomfortable. It's actually reminding me, I think that's a point that you brought up in one of our initial conversations. I think you had some funky, there's some law, universal law, but like you can't make space. You can't invite in higher quality people or higher quality experiences. If I understood correctly, it's like just, it's a life experiential sort of law, but you can't invite in a higher quality experience in your life if you don't first get really real with what's showing up or not showing up in your life. Get real and go, okay, well, that clearly is not conducive to me. That guy, I mean, he's okay, he was cool, we were growing up together, could be like a biological brother, I'm thinking of mine. It's like there's certain parts, it's like, yeah, cool, there's a lot of sentimentality, but when you really do that inner work and introspective thing and go, well, is that a high enough standard? If I'm living this out in 30 years time, am I going to be fucking happy? You know,
that's it comes like, I love how practical this has been where you're sharing like, you know, is it going to work for you long-term in a marriage? And can you just be honest if like, oh yeah, my mate that I've known since childhood, we've been through so much together, he treats women like shit. It's like, he's my dominant influence. We talk about relationships all the time. I want to study this stuff. Do you really think you're going to be able to outwork that kind of conditioning? That doesn't mean you need to cut your mate off. It just means you need to have a radical conversation and set a boundary with him and be like, listen, I'm not available to talk about women like that. And if I hear you talking like that, I'm going to let you know. And I still love you, and I don't want this in my life. And what you'll see a lot of the time is he'll react, but then he's going to get curious. He's like, man, what is this men's work you've been talking about? Wow, your relationship has really changed a lot since blah, 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 blah. So you can be that integrous person in someone else's life. And that's extremely powerful.
That's just a fucking potent way to leave what has been an extraordinary conversation with you again, Kevin. I just really search for those moments. It's like, okay, let's break off at the peak. Really potent, practical advice and guidance. And thanks for being very real about your own challenges throughout the conversation. Kevin, powerful kings listening in from all around the planet. Undoubtedly, the vast majority, I am imagining, have been piqued in their curiosity to know more about you, about your teachings, what you're gifting the world. Where can the guys track you down online?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on all the platforms, even TikTok, which I don't necessarily like, but I'm experimenting with it. So at Kevin J. Oros on Instagram is the best place to go. And you can find me Facebook, YouTube, all the places. It's O-R-O-S-Z-Z. So, yeah, I mean, YouTube is a great place to go. My YouTube channel has tons of free content, podcasts, videos, even masterclasses that you can get involved in. I also write a Substack, so you can join my Substack, which is like an email newsletter blog where I write about exclusively Polarity. The Polarity Dojo is my free community on Facebook, which is a closed community, but you just apply and get in. And yeah, a lot of good stuff there. I mean, you'll have your mind blown as a man. If you're curious about stuff, you want to hear from women, go in there and read the threads, because the women will tell you everything about what they do and don't want. And it's been really amazing to be a part of that. And yeah, ran a group program last year called Primal Polarity, which is like very much like actionable, deep dating, you know, crash course around everything from signaling, dating apps, sexuality, tantra, you know, how to approach relationships, how to set agreements, boundaries, how to court versus date, all of it. And so I'm going to run another round of that this year. It's going to change a bit. But yeah, you'll be hearing all about that on my channel soon.
Amazing. Kevin, thank you so much. And like, you know, it's always the case. It's an honor and a privilege to have had you in again. And, you know, when in a modern context, we have so much freely available, but it's just slowing down and having the humility to realize and recognize, you know, the guys listening into the podcast, I try to remind us, it's like, it's so easy. Everything is so easy and so available that our nervous systems can be, yeah, just listening to this guy. And like, you know, it's like, yet there's so much practical wisdom there. My invitation to the guys listening in is like, there's so many tweaks, small tweaks to major substantial tweaks that you can make there, is find, you know, the one or two ideas that just show up in your nervous system that you like are most memorable for you, and implement them. Start, you know, just start showing up in your relationship in a way, powerfully and consciously, implement the tools because they work, and you will enjoy a better intimate relationship and marriage. And you deserve that. Your woman deserves that. And the world deserves that. Kevin Oros, thank you so much for being in here again, man.
Really appreciate you, Mark. Big love, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Guys, rock on. Have an amazing kingly day. And we leave you with our mantra: better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazing kingly day. And before you go, guys, our brand new live training, Marriage Transformation Heroes 2023, is launching really soon. Go from fearing your best will never be enough to being the confident and competent marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Join the waitlist now, link in the podcast description, and you will get these amazing benefits. 15% off launch day price. And even more importantly, you get front of queue priority access to what will be the only Marriage Transformation Heroes happening in 2023. Join the waitlist now and take your first step towards being the husband she brags about.